one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
Swung on.
Bit crushed.
And the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were doing while Joe DiMaggio was making history. This week, actually, over on Baseball Prospectus, I have a story both on the rats they found at Angel Stadium and the history of that situation, as well as another feature that'll be going up soon on a baseball field in, where was it? Ohio, that was famous for not allowing home runs. So that was a fun story I came across this past week that will be on Baseball Prospectus in the next few days as well. I'm joined, as always, by Liz Rocher, the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Hello, Liz.
Hello. Hello, Justin. It's been a nice week of baseball, hasn't it?
A very nice, pleasant week of baseball. I gotta say, I don't want to be a guy who talks about the weather, but this has been the most pleasant weather in spring I feel like we've had in maybe 20 years. I think it's largely like wet and cold and just late, like winter, extra winter most of the time. There's storms and wind and all kinds of. This year, it has just been beautiful, perfect baseball weather, where we are anyway. And I honestly can't complain.
No, me either. It's been like there have been some unpleasant days, but like I comment to my husband, I'm just like, it's been like in the upper 50s, low 60s. And I paused. I'm like, this is what spring is, isn't it? This is spring.
It probably
like,
means
it's such a long time since I've felt like, just like, God, why is it so cold? Like, no, this is not cold. This is normal for this time of year. It's not supposed to be summer, like straight up summer in May.
We're probably going to pay for this by like not having fall this year or
completely.
Something. But it'll be like 85 degrees on Thanksgiving this year just to
the
make up for this.
The die has already been cast.
We've
said our words.
The weather, I wouldn't say the weather has been pristine, as we are saying, in Boston, where there were threats of rain, there was tarps on the field at different points. The Phillies managed to stave off and avoid, and I didn't stave anything off, they're not that powerful, but they did manage to avoid any negative weather patterns in their series in Boston, which, Liz, Phillies have won their fifth series in a row by taking 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox, Liz. That's something. I mean, I'm willing to just stop right there and say, hey, look at that. Because that's not a place I think a lot of people saw this team or had an easy time seeing this team in just a couple of weeks ago. And now it just seems like, yeah, Phillies, they got to win series. And this is what was said at the beginning when they kind of seemed like they were turning it around. It was like, don't press like so hard that you think you got it. Now we got to win 10 in a row to make up for that messy losing streak. It was like, no, just start playing well, just start playing consistently and start winning series. You know, that takes the pressure off of how every night's got to be a win or every night's got to be perfect and just say, no, we got to win 2 out of 3 in general. And that's gonna have an impact, and it already has. The Phillies are tied for second place in the National League East. We don't have to get into the specifics of what their record is and how bad the division looks right now, and
it's bad.
How the team they're tied with is actually the Nationals. You know, we don't have to get into any of that. All we have to say is that they're in second place, and they have won 5 series in a row, which culminated in this series win up in Boston. Liz, you know how many runs they used to beat the Red Sox in 2 out of 3 games?
It was definitely under 10. Might have been 7.
I was going to say 6, but that doesn't actually, that's not accurate. I said in their wins. So in their wins, they only used 5 runs to beat the Red Sox twice. Yeah. 2-1 and 3-1. Their 17 hit total was greatly ballooned by the 9 hits they managed in game 3. So that wasn't exactly a balanced attack, I'd say. They went 3-for-12 with runners in scoring position and 1-for-4 with the bases loaded. I guess that doesn't count JT Realmuto getting hit by a pitch with the bases loaded. but that counts as them scoring a run in that scenario,
yes,
which they almost didn't without that ball striking.
Of course. Without
someone throwing a little bit of equipment at JT Realmuto, the Phillies once again have an ofer in the bases loaded department. But fortunately, that didn't happen. And 7 Phillies in this series had at least 10 plate appearances. Turner, Bohm, Marsh, Realmuto, Schwarber, Garcia, and Harper. I'm not saying that to impress you. I'm using that to set up this other thing. Those guys collectively had 2 extra base hits. Do you know what they were?
Oh, God.
Kyle Schwarber home runs, both of them.
Shocking. I am shocked.
Now, I will tell you, Bryson Stott and Justin Crawford had fewer than 10 plate appearances, so that they didn't qualify for that group, but Stott had a double, and Justin Crawford had a home run as well, both of which were critical for the Phillies, because again, as I said, every one of these games was a close game. Every bit of offense you could produce between both of these teams, who are so thirsty for offense, was going to matter. Bryce Harper, Liz, did not have a great series in Boston, which is unfortunate. He went 1-for-12 with a single. All those strikeouts we were gushing about him not having, he had a couple of them here. Just a couple. Didn't go overboard. He had a single walk and four strikeouts, and that's still a faster clip than he'd been striking out at recently, which we said, I think, in our last roundtable, it had been like 8 days he struck out one time. So that was making a statement. This is
and
a little more.
We also said not sustainable.
Right. Yeah. That's that kind of success that's just too good to be true. I think we all have a firm grasp on that. And four strikeouts. I mean, you know, again, I'm not thinking Harper had any particular tough time with Boston pitching. I feel like his approach right now is he's got that, like, he's not at his most aggressive, but he's kind of doing that pre-aggressive, I guess you could call it, where he's a swinger. You know, Harper is a swinger. He is very violent when he's in the batter's box, and sometimes that leads to a lot of hard contact, and sometimes that leads to a lot of fast wind. And in this case, you got more wind than contact. It's unfortunate to see, but I'm not particularly worried in the long term about Harper. Your hits leader for the series, take a guess, Liz. Who is the Phillies' total hits leader for this series?
Is it Alec Bohm?
It is Alec Bohm. With his four mighty singles, led the Phillies in hits over these three games in Boston. But that's the general state of the offense. I hope it didn't sound like I was complaining. I heard myself back there a second ago. It did sound kind of negative for a series the Phillies did win. But truthfully, the Phillies produced very little offense in this series, Liz, and they still managed to win. So you would be unsurprised to learn then that they were able to rely a lot more on their starting pitching. Wheeler, Jesus Luzardo, Andrew Painter, they all allowed combined 14 hits and a walk over these three games. And just the one homer that was allowed by Andrew Painter. So three starts, three starters, one walk and one home run shared between them. Liz, that's got to be good news.
Oh, yeah. It's great news. I mean, you want to see those numbers from guys like Wheeler who are coming back, but you really want to see Andrew Painter contributing positively to all of this, since he's had a bit of a tough time. His start earlier this week was, I think, really positive for him. I was pleased to see him do well. I'm pleased to see Zach Wheeler continue to do well. Luzardo had a great start. Like, things are, the rotation has got itself together. It's just still very much a, if one of them starts to falter, it's almost like all of them fall down together.
Yeah, that they lose in clusters. You know, it does seem like that'll happen
exactly.
On occasion. Paul Casella of MLB.com says that Wheeler needed 16 pitches to get through the first three innings of Game 1 on Tuesday.
He's the same.
That's efficiency.
He gets so lucky.
Until now, he actually had never done that with fewer than 25 pitches.
Oh my God.
So, if anything, Zach Wheeler might have come back even more terrifying. So, prepare yourself. Prepare yourself for that. That being said, Don Mattingly said he was watching after the third inning for Wheeler to do a Maddux. Are you familiar with this statistic?
Oh, yeah. I saw him talk about that, or I saw like a quote flash on the screen. I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, using modern baseball terminology.
Yes. For those not in the know, a Maddux is named after former Braves starter Greg Maddux. It is a complete game thrown on fewer than 100 pitches. And Wheeler was still qualifying for that all the way into the seventh. But ultimately, he allowed a hit and a run. Made it only 7 1/3 innings into the game. But it was a stellar start from the ace. There's just, yeah, there's just nothing around that. Wheeler said before the game
better.
He actually only threw three strikes in the bullpen before going out to his start. And he said that typically means things are either going to go really good or very bad. And he was eager to see which this start was going to be.
I love baseball players. They're just like, listen, I got my body. I'm inside it. But I can't tell you what's going to happen. I know what happened just now, but what's going to happen then? I don't know.
Like goes into his windup and delivers and opens his eyes and it like, you know, could be in the guy's ear, could be in the catcher's mitt right down the pike, and he's just like, oh, interesting.
Could have made a hole in the netting. All right. Who knows?
Speaking of efficiency, Kyle Schwarber hit a first inning homer for the second straight day and a homer in the for his fifth straight game, moving him quite hurriedly, Liz, to the top of the MLB home run leaders list. So Kyle Schwarber is right where he needs to be, I'd say, despite, you know, I don't think anybody bothers pointing out Kyle Schwarber's batting average anymore. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you're comfortable with where Kyle Schwarber is at this point.
It's not even comfortable. It's do I care? Question mark. And the answer is always no. If he's hitting home runs, then I don't care.
Right. Bryson Stott's ground rule double in the second to give the Phillies an insurance run they needed to win the game. Not mathematically, but just for everyone's sake, they needed an insurance run there. And Bryson Stott provided it. He is actually, Liz, in the month of May, which we are halfway through, Stott is the team leader in doubles with four this month. He is also the team leader, perhaps more impressively, in RBI with 12. He is the team's stolen base leader on the season. That also probably shouldn't surprise you, but if it wasn't happening, we'd be noticing that too. He has 8, and Liz, he's not been caught once. So he's 8 for 8 in stolen base attempts, and that leads the Phillies. I think whoever's behind him has like 4. So he leads by a lot. He is the Phillies' biggest base stealing threat right now. And he beat out that grounder in game 3 after review that got the Phillies another important run in that game. So Liz, is this the Bryson Stott-a-sance? Like, what does success look like here? We're all waiting for Stott. He's been playing pretty well, but he's got some low numbers cumulatively right now. But I say this is a more consistently productive Bryson Stott than we've probably seen in 2 years. And more importantly, yes, he's hammered a few homers as part of this, but you're looking for a similar output to Brandon Marsh. I mean, you're looking for lots of singles, some doubles, maybe a triple once a month, but he's the guy getting on base and scoring when Harper or Schwarber pounds one, or he's taking third, or he's getting in the pitcher's head as he's dancing off second. In May, Bryson Stott's got the third highest slugging percentage on the team, other than Harper and Schwarber. And his on-base percentage is actually sub-300, which is below the line you want to see, given the type of player he is, especially a fast runner like Stott. So, Liz, what do you make of Stott right now? Nobody can complain about a guy hitting a few homers, but would you rather see those on-base numbers go up? Are you satisfied with his performance so far, even with plenty of room to improve?
It's confusing. He's a confusing player, as we've all figured out by now. My goal for him personally is just to see him continue to be productive, to add positively to games. Like, I want his numbers to go up. I would love for him to be more productive at the plate, but he just needs to add. He needs to add value to games. And that's something, like, people will get on him when he doesn't do that because it makes all of his other flaws stand out really large. So if he can continue to do this, not only will he get people off his back, he'll actually help the Phillies because all of the little things he did were really important. He really did just make it for when he beat out the single in game 3. Like, he just made it. And like, that was a good call, you know, for him to tell them to put for them to review it. You know, he was out of the box. He did not waste a second. And it was so good to see, you know, you want to see these guys trying hard, even when they're like, don't press. You know, it's nice to see and be like, no, I'm going to get this base. This is mine.
So would you say, I mean, actually, his numbers are lower than they were at the end of last year's cumulative numbers. So I'm not going to ask that question. I was going to say, if he played at like the level he's at now for the rest of the season, would you be happy? And the answer is no. No one would be happy. I think he had a pretty hot start to the season. We're 6 weeks in, and I think he kind of went back down in a couple of areas. But for the most part, I stand by my statement that this is still a more consistently helpful, I'll say that instead of productive, Bryson Stott than we have seen in a couple of years now. And I still think, I won't say that this is the Bryson Stott-a-sance. Not yet.
No.
I'd say this is it could be on its way, but I think the expectations around Stott have changed. Not necessarily lower, you've changed what you've come to expect from him. There was a time where I was saying he was going to be leading off for the NL All-Star team. I think that's probably not going to be in the cards anymore, but I'd settle for a solid hitting, fast base running, you know, stolen base leading, on-base guy that's really helpful in this lineup. And we've seen how guys like Brandon Marsh can play that role really well. They don't have to be the engine, but they can be a rapidly firing piston. And, you know, that can be a role for Bryson Stott as well. And I think he's closer to filling that role than he probably has been for a couple of years.
Very true. I completely agree.
Well, in game two up in Boston, after Trevor Story homered in the second off Andrew Painter, Justin Crawford tied the game back up with a solo shot, his second and 11th RBI of the season. That was one of the Phillies' three hits on the day. But to Painter's credit, that homer was the only run he allowed to Trevor Story through five innings of work. He gave up four hits, no walks, four strikeouts. Liz, I'd call that a better start than we've seen him make in the last three or four. Quick hook for the kid. Don Mattingly said they weren't going to let him go through the Red Sox order a third time, but he really liked what he saw from Andrew Painter's command. Three of those four strikeouts, Liz, this is an important detail I think Paul Casella pointed out on MLB.com. Three of his four strikeouts came in the fifth, right before he came out of the game. Does that tell you anything about where Andrew Painter's, like, you know, how he's gearing up here? I mean, we're seeing I wouldn't call this a huge improvement, but definitely better, for sure, than some of the starts he's made this year.
Absolutely. The fact that he fired those strikes right before he was taken out, like, he had more bullets in there. I like that Mattingly isn't letting him twist in the wind too much, especially when you're going through the order a third time. They're looking at those balls a lot of time like grapefruits. They could see them a lot better the third time. So I like not leaving him out there, but he definitely had more to give. And that's what you want to see from a young guy. I'd rather cut him off before he gives everything than wait until he's given everything and the bases are loaded and you're looking at the wrong end of, you know, the score again.
Third time through the order, batters are hitting .318 off Andrew Painter with an 885 OPS.
Go.
So I will say that, if you're looking to keep your rookie's head on straight, identifying areas where, yeah, his numbers aren't great, and then removing him before they can become a problem, that's a smart move. Take some mental pressure off the kid. Let him leave the field with five solid innings and something to build off of. On the other hand, Liz, Andrew Painter's numbers the first time through the order are kind of worse. What's that telling you? But that's okay. You can't not have a first time through the order is the logic of that. You might as well not be a pitcher. And I don't think the Phillies are saying Andrew Painter shouldn't be a pitcher. So, you know, that's not as applicable.
How can we have him face the guys only the second time through the order? Not the first and not the third, just the second. How does that work?
Yeah, I guess that doesn't even really work with an opener because it's still your first time when you come in the second inning. Yeah, but like I said, I don't think I'm not saying that's anything that's got to be like, he's for the rest of his career, he can't face a lineup for a third time. No, but it's more just right now as he's playing this important role as a rookie on a team with playoff aspirations. Yeah, finding ways to relieve pressure from time to time can be really helpful for a young pitcher like that. So I thought that was a good move. Sadly, the offense never really clocked in game two, which you can tell because they only went 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position rather than like 2-for-16 or something. Sonny Gray struck out six of them and got a pinch hit blast from Sedan Rafaela. So he was just kind of off to the races. Good day for Sonny Gray against a scuffling Phillies lineup. Also, the Phillies bullpen couldn't hold Boston back for Painter either, unfortunately. Tanner Banks allowed a single before Orion Kirkering. Unfortunately, he's been on such a good run lately, but he gave up that two-run home run to Rafaela with two outs in the sixth. Liz, Andrew Painter's going to need offensive backup all season, I think, and as he starts getting his legs under him. Do you see this famously inconsistent offense being a hurdle to his success this year?
It's a hurdle to all of the pitcher's success. So I'm going to say that's a yes. I'm like, even Wheeler's not immune to it. You know, Sanchez isn't immune to it. The offense will screw with all of them. And so it's hard to depend on it. I feel like all they could do is hope that they'll be there, which is not like the greatest mind space to be in. But what else can they do?
It just brings to this series in particular, brings it front of mind again that Wheeler was able to make two runs stand up and Lizardo was able to make three runs stand up. And I'm not saying Painter should have also been able to do that automatically, too. It's just that might be how this team has to win games. And it just kind of puts Painter in an unfortunate position because the team needs him and they need the pitcher they think he's going to grow into and that I think he's going to grow into. You got to allow for this growth period as he's a first timer in the league. However, this is a team, there's no denying, that is built on starting pitching, and its success is paramount to their overall success. So having an offense that kind of needs a good 6-7 innings from their starter to have a decent shot is a problem unique to Painter. I feel like that he's both part of the rotation that's supposed to be the strength, while also needs more support from the offense that's supposed to be carried by the rotation. You know, it just puts him in a tough spot. So we'll see. Like I said, this was a positive start for Painter, and you know, we've seen more from the Phillies offense the past few weeks than what they were able to do in Boston. So no reason to think the Phillies are going to win exclusively 2-3 run games for the rest of the season. Game three. Another Schwarbaum powers the Phillies offense, this time not until the eighth, because the Jesus Luzardo-Ranger Suarez battle did not disappoint. The current and former Phillies battled for five and a third innings, neither of them surrendering a run. Luzardo made it through the sixth and struck out four. Suarez came out after five and a third. He struck out eight. They each allowed a walk. As far as seeing Ranger again, I mean, he said no ill will towards the Phillies. Kind of would have been surprised if he had been like, oh, yeah, big time problem with all those people. No, he said no ill will toward the Phillies about his departure. Not really, he said. I think I went out there just like any other game. They had their plans, and now I'm here in Boston, and I'm happy here. So there were some friendly greetings and head nods. Luzardo said Ranger was like a brother to him. Paul Casella wrote that the Red Sox, upon reaching second base twice in Game 3, seemed to be signaling to the hitters, but both Don Mattingly and Jesus Luzardo both felt that they were just goofing around, trying to make him think they had something when they didn't. They went 0-2 with men on second, so that was generally considered, all right, well, they didn't have anything. But it's always a concern with Luzardo, Liz, and in a way, I'm kind of encouraged by the fact that they were hyper-vigilant about any kind of tomfoolery happening with Luzardo on the mound, given that creates problems for him.
It does. That was really great that they now have like a dedicated person to checking, you know, when Luzardo's pitching, just watching camera angles from every single camera angle on a television and making sure he's not tipping anywhere.
The Luzardo squad watching with binoculars from the upper deck to see if his lip twitches before he throws a fastball.
Most boring sitcom you've seen in years.
Yeah, it's mostly just silence and baseball ambiance. Johan Duran, got to mention him. He had a good series. He allowed one hit and two walks, but no runs, and struck out five of the nine batters he faced. Duran has struck out 11 of the 23 batters he's faced this month, giving up only three hits and a run. I will say, Liz, my early concerns about him looking a little sloppy to start the season have almost entirely dissipated. The only thing that would keep him around is those five walks he's logged this month, including the two from this series. They just kind of remain little embers of concern. These are just needless base runners who do not need to exist. And you are the closer. You are in there because it's time to just game shut.
This has been the Phillies' problem for years. All of their closers have a nasty, nasty habit of allowing base runners, either through walks or whatever. And so it's concerning that Duran is also starting to show signs of this disease that appears to be endemic to Phillies closers. Turn it around, please.
Walks, when regularly allowed, become runs. Because that's just the difference between, but I think that's the difference between him having a good month and a great month as the Phillies closer. I think Duran's doing his job well for the most part, which you love to see.
Oh,
you know, we're getting, you know, things are going better for the Phillies if we got to get as ticky tack as that to find a criticism. Johan Duran has been coming into games, and they've been ending with Phillies wins. That is a success, and he's looking, his strikeout numbers, he's looking good too. And I got to give credit to Brad Keller, man. He has not had the most solid season, but up in Boston, he faced seven batters. He allowed one hit, a double, but didn't allow a run or a walk, and struck out five of the seven batters he faced. So that's
beautiful.
Yeah, got to give credit where credit's due for any reliever other than Johan Duran, because the Phillies need all the strong, reliable arms they can get. And when a guy has, like, you know, a couple of good appearances in a row, then you start thinking, all right, this is something like he can build off of. Maybe this is like, we'll be saying a couple months from now, yeah, but in like mid-May, he really turned it around and was solid the rest of the year. It just creates the potential for that, and the Phillies need more guys like that for sure coming out of the pen. These were three low-scoring games, 2-1, 3-1, and 3-1. Is this more of what you expect from the Phillies this season, Liz? This is kind of the question I've been dancing around this whole time. A team whose pitching keeps games tight, offense might be light, but enough, and the bullpen can manage to hold it together. Was this series kind of the Phillies existing in their truest form?
I think you're right. I was, when you were saying it, I'm like, this doesn't all sound amazing, but this is who the Phillies are. You know, their offense is inconsistent. They depend on their pitching. They need the bullpen to stand up. You know, the Phillies are at their best when all three areas are working in concert. You know, when they're all doing well. But it seems like the offense is just going to be light. No matter what we see from the Phillies, no matter what, you know, highs, peaks that they go through, the valleys are always pretty long and big. And so we just have to get used to it. I think that this series was a great way to get used to it, because this is, if they're going to win, this is how they're going to do it.
Yeah, and that's why you build a strong rotation and also why you lock it in. I mean, I know we can all make smart remarks, so I certainly will, about Aaron Nola, his role in a strong rotation. And we've been talking about, Jesus Luzardo. There's days where he looks unhittable and days where he looks entirely hittable. And, yeah, obviously Andrew Painter's a rookie, learning to pitch in the major leagues and to adhere to a major league schedule and everything. But that being said, regardless of how things have turned out individually, I don't think there's any arguing, like, that's the blueprint for this team. Like, that's the idea, at the very least, that they are a team with some very strong pitching. And they should have more offense. Like, Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner, you know, they're certainly not the only ones, but, like, those guys alone should create a at least, you know, functioning offense. And then you throw in guys like Brandon Marsh having a great time and, you know, hopefully further improvements from guys like Alec Bohm and Bryson Stott. You know, you're supposed to be, I think, getting some more offense from this team, but perhaps it is the Phillies learning who these guys are in that they are an inconsistent offense and have been since this whole playoff run started. So building around the pitching building around the pitching is kind of the move here. And then just saying, yeah, we know this team can score, but with an extra strong starting pitching staff that's like repressing an offense and allowing like, you know, 1-2 runs at most over 6-7 innings, that's going to give an offense that's even inconsistent a better shot at winning. And I do think that's how this team is built, and that's how they won in Boston. So we'll see if that continues, because the Red Sox were just a great team to pitch to, frankly. Alex Spare wrote that they have scored 22 runs, the Red Sox, in their last 12 games at Fenway Park, tied for the fewest over a 12-game span in the 115-season history of Fenway Park. In addition to that terrible offensive statistic, Boston is currently last in home runs in Major League Baseball with 11. They are 26th in batting average at .223. They are tied for 25th in on-base percentage at .299. Their team on-base percentage is under .300. They are 30th, dead last, in slugging at .326. They are therefore 28th in OPS at .626. They are 29th in runs per game. They are scoring, they're averaging less than 3 runs a game, Liz. 2.86. And they are tied in what is their highest statistic. They are tied for 16th in doubles in baseball.
Good God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boston is bad.
Like I was saying, I'd say Philly's pitching performed, well, against this lineup that's performing so poorly and having such a disappointing year, people are not happy up in Boston. I'd say Philly's pitching, you know, again, built around that being a strength, performed exactly as they're supposed to against a team like that, which is funny to me because I don't know if you saw Paul Skene start against the Rockies this week, but boy, they were playing that up. I've never seen a game marketed as a no-hitter before it even began, before that is exactly what everyone was saying. They weren't even like being cute about it. It was just assumed Paul Skene was going to erase this Rockies lineup. And while he's Paul Skene and they're the Rockies, I understand It just felt super obnoxious to me to just like go into it like, oh yeah, everyone like basically putting a no hitter alert banner on the box score before the game, even before the players were even on the field. Just felt kind of obnoxious to me. You know, I didn't care for that.
Completely but, obnoxious.
At the same time, he did no hit them for like 6 innings. So.
But you know what? We don't know what's going to happen. We've seen terrible teams hit the crap out of a really good pitcher. Like Randy Johnson got knocked around by terrible lineups. Yes, it happens all the time. Like, you can't. I hate this. That is obnoxious is the right word. I don't know if there's a word in German that means ultra uber obnoxious somehow, but that's what that is. It's just like, come on. He's not a god. He's not a pitching god. He's just a dude. Can we not treat him like a dude?
He was
we treat the Rockies like professional baseball players. Like
well,
they are
that's
the Rockies,
the other thing.
But they're also professional baseball players. They are better at their job than like 99.9% of the people on this planet.
I don't like, know.
They've earned
how
the right to be given. They've earned respect.
I don't know how they responded to all this, but how could you not be completely insulted and motivated to win? As just like natural competitors, as they would have to be, just as professional athletes, to see everyone, all of these broadcasters and analysts and studio hosts just being like, yeah, no hitter, possible no hitter today. It's possible perfect game today because the Rockies are so, so bad. They're basically a pile of stuffed animals and Paul Skeens is going to throw 10 fastballs through them. It's going to be something to see, folks. Come on out. It was just like, wow, that is brash. But you know who broke it up? Our old pal Mickey Moniak broke up that no hit bid, and that just back to my original point, which was just that that's how the Phillies are supposed to pitch against a very soft, lousy lineup like Boston has. And while expectations are totally fair, I mean, you know, there's such a thing as overextending, I would say. Well, after winning that series in Boston, the Pirates are coming to, the Phillies are going to be facing the Pirates in Pittsburgh, who is so hot right now, despite being fourth in the National League Central and 6-4 in their last 10. They just finished taking 2 of 3 in Colorado. They're winning more games. They're having a good time in Pittsburgh, trying to keep up this success. But it's a weird division in that they are 24-20. And in fourth place, which is better than the Phillies, who are tied for second in their division and have a losing record. But that's just how things are shaping up this year. The NL Central is the place to be, and the Pirates are one of those teams who are helping to make it that way. Third baseman Nick Gonzalez, right fielder Ryan O'Hearn, center fielder O'Neill Cruz, and second baseman Brandon Lau are all putting up good to solid offensive numbers for Pittsburgh, with Lau providing a lot of the power. I called the additions of O'Hearn and Lau B-list this offseason, and not really a true investment in success by the Pirates. I'm not saying I was totally wrong. I mean, you know, they do still feel like guys you add in addition to, like, a bigger name. But the Pirates' offense
is... It's May 15th. I think there's still time to make for it to come true.
But I just want to give credit where credit's due. These guys have really brought value to the lineup. And when you see that the Pirates have won... one of them is always in the highlight package somewhere. So, you know, hey, those guys are making an impact. Fair's fair. And I think they're going to be a handful for the Phillies, largely because of who they will be putting on the mound as well, which I think is where Pittsburgh's real threat lies. Because, yeah, you're going to see some familiar names as the Phillies and Pirates face off at PNC Park this weekend. Tonight at 6:40. It's going to be Aaron Nola and Braxton Ashcraft. Now, that's not the familiar name that I was referring to, of course, because I feel like the Phillies have never faced Braxton Ashcraft. No, a couple of them have. They have like 4 or 5 collective at-bats against him. So that's kind of the identifying trait of this series. The Phillies do not have a lot of exposure to the 3 starters the Pirates are going to be putting out there, and that's probably not a great thing. This team doesn't do great facing a starter for the first time, or the first couple of times even, especially when that starter is Bubba Chandler, like who they're going to face in game two, a very high ranked Pirates pitching prospect following up behind Paul Skeens as part of this wave of young pitching talent the Pirates are going to have coming out of their system. On Saturday at 4:05, Chandler will be facing Christopher Sanchez. So that should be a pretty well pitched game, but possibly not even as well pitched as the Sunday matinee game, Liz, which is giving us Zach Wheeler facing Paul Skeens. Thought the Boston series was low scoring, I'd lower those scoring projections another couple of notches for that one. Because, yeah, if both of those guys are even, you know, feeling average that day, that's going to be a very well pitched game and something to see. So that'll be some focus for this series for sure.
Very excited to see that one.
That's at 1:35 on Sunday at PNC Park. Joining me now is Mitch Rupert, former baseball writer for the Williamsport Post-Gazette and contributor to PhilliesMinorThoughts.com. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Mitch_Rupert for plenty of informed insight on Phillies minor league prospects. That's where I get my information. Well, actually, I'll just say, whenever you hear me talking about minor league players on Hittin' Season, it's usually from information I've gleaned from Mitch, as well as other sources, but he's kind of like the spine of Phillies minor league prospect knowledge. And I advise all of you who are interested in Phillies minor league prospects to follow him as well. Mitch, welcome back to Hittin' Season.
Justin, I'm happy to be here, man.
I knew I was going to have you on the show again once I saw, and you probably knew this too, that Gabriel Rincones Jr. hit a 496-foot home run last week in Clearwater for the Threshers low A squad. He's currently still rehabbing from knee tendonitis. Is that okay? We call it rehabbing still. He's working his way back from some early season health issues. Rincones, I think it's fair to say, has distinguished himself among Phillies prospects. No one projects him as a superstar, and there are leagues along the way to Philadelphia, like the Eastern League, in which the Reading Fightins play, which are known to be a boost for hitters, given the dimensions of the parks and other factors. There are also certainly flaws in his game. He's been hurt a couple of times. He's got the knee now. He's had shoulder stuff. He's had a thumb thing. He's just passable as a defender, generally, in outfield, in corner outfield spots. And stop me if you've heard this one. Guy struggles against lefties. However, as Baseball America reads in his most recent scouting report, Rincones is one of the best ball strikers in the organization. He doesn't chase a lot, so he draws some walks, and almost nobody in the organization can hit the ball harder. Last time you and I talked about Rincones, he had that monster home run that he hit out of First Energy Stadium in Reading and over the neighboring highway. These are the kind of distinctions I'm talking about. So I get very excited every time Gabriel Rincones does something like this. How has he developed as a player since that home run over the highway in Reading to this 496-foot one? Same approach, or have you seen things evolve?
No, I think he kind of is what he is at this point. You know, he's the long side of a platoon in the big leagues where he's going to face all the right-handers, and you better sure have somebody in there to face the left-handers when they come up, because he's not going to do well against them. But that's fine, because when he puts the bat on the baseball, he's really good, and he impacts the baseball to the tune of 496 feet. You know, and I had somebody criticize me and say, there's no way that ball went 496. And I was like, the Statcast doesn't lie. Like, and that's where that number came from. Like, he has the ability to hurt the baseball, when he hits it. And if it had not been for a slow start to his season last year, he probably would have been in the big leagues already. With all the outfield issues that the Phillies had, they're comfortable with his defense out there. He's not Adolis Garcia out there, but he's also not Nick Castellanos out there. They're comfortable with that, and he can punish right-handed pitching. And he got off to such a terrible start a year ago. Like, he hit, I think, 239 in April, 147 in May, 200 in June. If he had just been a 250 hitter, he'd have been in the big leagues last year. And I think once he's back from the knee injury, he gets some time in AAA to see that kind of breaking stuff. There's a path that they're probably going to try and find a way to get him on the roster.
I was going to ask, what, if any, role do you expect him to play with the big club this year? And you're right, I forgot, last year, if not for his injury concerns, they probably would have found a spot for him. Do you feel like he's somebody who could be a difference maker at the major league level?
Oh, well, it depends what you mean by a difference maker. I mean, I think we all thought to a certain extent Otto Kemp could be a difference maker facing left-handers to a certain extent, me maybe not so much.
Say Dave Dombrowski thought that. I'm not going to say we all thought that.
But he was somebody that you would feel comfortable with being in there against left-handers.
Sure.
Same kind of thing with Felix Reyes. Like he wouldn't be struggling to hold his head above water. And I don't know if Rinconis is going to be 10 times better than that, 5 times better than that, 2 times better than that, or that player. But I know he can hit right-handed pitching, and I know when he squares up the baseball, it goes a really long way. So at some point, you got to figure out what you got with him and see if he can succeed in the big leagues.
So any analyst will tell you the reasons not to be excited about a prospect. Typically goes like, oh, yeah, this guy does this great thing. Here's 5 things he does wrong. But seriously, that great thing is pretty exciting. That's how any scouting report, the format will generally go. So, like I said, there are some reasons, there's some things that you want to see Gabriel Rincones improve on. But as you said, in some respects, he is what he is. And you can start a season with question marks in a couple of spots and wondering like, okay, let's see what we get from this guy. And then we'll know what we have in him. But it sounds more like the Phillies know what they have in Gabriel Rincones. It's not too old to change or tweak or develop or adjust or anything, but he's kind of like in that second stage of development where he's not as raw. He's more experienced. So, do you feel like that's somebody Phillies fans can latch onto? Cause obviously the power is going to be the highlighting factor here. And that gets everybody excited. Everybody, you know, you see that highlight, you know, home run goes far. He does something like that at the major league level. It's going to catch a lot of eyes because that's 496 feet. I hate to say this, but like, that's some Dick Allen stuff. So
it's the longest home run in minor league baseball this year. Like in all of minor league baseball, it's the longest home run. Like don't get it twisted. He's a 3 true outcome guy. He's going to hit a home run. He's going to strike out or he's going to walk. He struck out 114 times in 119 games last year, but he also walked 80 times. So he has a good feel for the strike zone. It's just about how often can he square the baseball up against big league pitching, you know? So it's easy to talk about all the things that could hold a player back because when you get to the big league level, those things are exacerbated to the tune where now we see it every time Justin Crawford hits a ball on the ground and somehow beats it out to first base. Like that's the evidence that he can succeed at the big league level if he hits the ball on the ground. You know, we're always going to talk about those things because those are the things that hold players back from being first division regulars, all-stars, potential Hall of Famers. And those are the things that come back to bite players. I mean, just don't get it twisted. He is who he is. He's going to hit a home run. He's going to strike out or he's going to walk. He's going to hit some doubles. Too, don't expect him to be the savior of the franchise, but expect him to be a guy who can help out.
And those are the kind of guys the Phillies have wound up being short on, it feels like. Harper spoke on this years ago at this point, but he was talking about the need for a franchise to have just a pool of players who aren't world beaters but live down at AAA, and when something goes wrong, you can bring one of them up, and they don't look like a deer in the headlights when they step in into the box in a major league stadium. And Rincones can do that, and I think he can probably do a little more, but I think it's, you know, expectations are what they are, but this is a player with a uniquely exciting trait. So it's just been an interesting road to navigate as far as Gabriel Rincones goes, and I hope the knee is fully healed soon, because I would be very excited to see him up with the Phillies and just, you know, seeing that journey culminate in a major league appearance. That's going to be pretty cool when it happens. But shifting from power to speed, Mitch, you've been posting a lot of Brian Rincone highlights this season as well. And while Rincones has the best power, 22-year-old Rincone is said by scouts to be a plus defender at shortstop, and the Phillies themselves believe he boasts the best infield arm in the system. He's also an above-average base runner. But it wasn't even Rincone's speed or defense that's been impressing people. He had a 4-hit night in Hartford, and as you posted, Rincone is hitting .319 over his last 13 games with a 9-for-11 strikeout-to-walk ratio. 9 of his 15 hits over that time have gone for extra bases, which is absurd, with 4 home runs. Are you seeing actual long-term improvements to Rincone's offensive approach? Is he blossoming into a more multifaceted player, or is this a defensive specialist who just likes hitting in Hartford?
You have to hope it's the former. and not the latter. I mean, we've been waiting for this. Like I think if you even go into MLB Pipeline and read his write-up, like if the bat ever becomes passable, like he's a big league player because the glove is that good. The bat hasn't even been close to passable over the last couple of years. He struggled mightily, I think, in the Arizona Fall League last year, but we saw some things in spring training where it looked like, I don't know, maybe he'd grown up. He's impacting the baseball more when he hits it. And now over the course of his last 21 games, he's hitting .321. He's got 7 home runs and 7 doubles during that time, and a triple just for good measure. And he still has that elite strike zone recognition, you know, 17 or 14 walks, 14 strikeouts on the year. Like, I sure hope that's who this guy is, because if that's who he is, he's an impactful big league player. The sample size is just too small. And that's the problem with minor league baseball, is we're all dealing with sample sizes that are just too small to make any long-term commitments to who some of these guys are, because they get shuttled through the system so quickly sometimes, you know. But this is a 21-game sample size that we're looking at. There is a little bit of that Redding ballpark factor that's kind of factored into this a little bit. He's hitting he's hitting 30 points higher on the road than he is at home. But that power is showing up more at home than it is on the road, you know? So there's a little bit of that Redding ballpark factor, but there's also, I think, signs of a kid who is 22 years old, just barely 22 years old, growing into his body.
Well, just because we're talking Phillies minor league middle infielders, have you fixed Aiden Miller's back yet?
I have not. They have not given me the opportunity to. I don't know why. I mean, I look very doctorly. Like, I could probably help out. And I don't know why they're not giving me that chance.
I haven't fixed it either. We'll check around. We'll see who's on this. Dante Norrie became a household name, at least in Pennsylvania households, after the World Baseball Classic, in which he was a standout player for the Tournament Darlings, Team Italy. The Phillies center field prospect is playing in Reading this year, and he has some things to work on. They want more power generated by his lower half. They want better roots on fly balls so he doesn't have to rely on his speed. And while the ceiling is high, Norrie is at the moment considered perhaps a ways away from it. Mitch, would you agree with that sentiment on Dante Norrie starting this year?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a good 3 months to end last year, and then a good month here to start the season. So we're only looking at four months of really good baseball from Dante Norrie. The question has always been, is how is his power going to show up? Not in terms of being a home run hitter, but in terms of being able to drive the baseball. You know, you don't want him to be a punch and Judy hitter up there. You want him to be able to hit the gaps, to be able to hit the corners. If he can hit 10 home runs a year, 10, 12 home runs a year, I think that would be a win for him. But he looks like a guy who can hit. And he looks like he's stronger. There wasn't a whole lot of physical developmental growth left in his body. He was almost 20 years old when he was drafted, so he was kind of pretty much at who he was. But he looks stronger. They've adjusted his stance a little bit. We noticed in the World Baseball Classic, he's not afraid of the moment. Like this guy looks like a big leaguer. To what extent? I don't know, but I think he's a valuable piece on a big league roster within a year to 18 months, something like that.
That's interesting you say that. I think that's just the mindset around Norrie at this point. My next question was literally going to be, can he meet this moment that is he's at in 2026? You've already seen some new stuff from Norrie, who is 21 years old. You referenced this, but he was drafted in the 2024 amateur draft in the first round by the Phillies. So he is somebody they still consider a big part of their minor league system. He clubbed an opposite field home run about a month ago, which I know raised your eyebrows. And it seems like this is an opportunity for him to take that step forward and be this, you know, consider this potential center fielder of the future. So, but you're saying everything we've seen to this point indicates, or many things we've seen to this point, indicates that he could in fact be that player with enough development as far as power goes.
Yeah, you just can't expect that development to happen overnight. And I think what we're learning, especially from guys like an Otto Kemp, guys like a Felix Reyes, the gap between AAA and the big leagues, I think, is bigger than it's ever been from a hitter's standpoint, especially. So the fact that Dante Norrie's in double A and he's doing what he's hitting 275, 280, something like that. He's having a nice season, a nice first month here in double A. That's great, but there's still a big gap between that and being a productive big league player. So I think anybody expecting him to be impactful at the big league level this year is a little off the rocker. Like, there's still some development that has to happen here, but you have to like the progress. You can get excited by the progress of what you're seeing. He is hitting home runs to the, I think both of his home runs are to the opposite field this year. A year ago, that would have been unimaginable that he could do that. And he's making it happen now.
Well, moving on to pitching for just a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about Gage Wood. He's allowed 14 hits, 9 earned runs, 12 walks, and 34 strikeouts in 22 and a third innings this season so far. It's good enough for a 3.63 ERA with Clearwater. This 22-year-old righty is ranked as the Phillies' number 2 prospect by MLB Pipeline, and they say his mid-90s fastball that can touch 98, quote, might be good enough to get big league hitters out now. He's got a wicked curve, he throws a lot of strikes, but as I think with most prospects, there's some concerns about durability and injury history, which almost feel like default concerns about any prospect. But Keith Law of The Athletic recently said that if the Angels were to trade Mike Trout this season, which he was advocating for them to do, the Phillies are a team that should consider him. And to acquire Trout, they should expect to trade somebody like Justin Crawford and or Gage Wood. Mitch, would you trade Gage Wood in exchange for Mike Trout? Presuming there's, you know, some other parts of this deal in the peripheral, but like with that being the center point of the trade, are you making that deal?
In a heartbeat.
Ooh, interesting.
I'm doing that. So here's my philosophy on things. I will always trade unproven minor league talent for proven big league talent any day. Yes, there are definite concerns about Mike Trout and his health, his durability, and how much he's going to cost to do that. But I will always trade especially A-ball level talent like Gage Wood. And I'm not saying he's an A-ball level pitcher. He's a really good pitcher. I think he's a guy who's going to be a factor in the rotation for a long time. But where he's at now, they still need to build him up. He threw only 40 innings total last year between his college season at Arkansas and his time in the minors. Like, they just got to build him up. They got to build strength in him. They got to get him ready to make 25 to 30 starts a year. That's going to take time. That's going to take at least a year. Like, I would not expect him in the big leagues this year. I would not expect him until maybe even late next year, depending on what success he has as he moves up the ladder here. So if that were to roll across my desk, I would absolutely do it.
Do you think Wood's development or, I don't know, promotion schedule, I guess, was altered at all when fellow pitching prospect Gene Cabrera was recently demoted from AAA to AA?
I don't think so. I think it's pretty clear that they have a very structured plan for what they want to do with Gage Wood. He's only thrown 60 pitches in a start twice this year, and that was his last two starts. He hasn't thrown more than 4 innings in a start this year. Like, they've been a lot better the last couple years about not treating these kids with kid gloves and letting them go out and throw, letting them get deep into games. But I think this is one guy they're going to be careful with because he doesn't have the amount of heavy workload on his arm that some of these others have had to this point in their career. So I was actually surprised. I thought we would see him in Jersey Shore in May, like once the weather warmed up. But the weather hasn't really warmed up. Like, we keep getting a couple warm days and then 3 really crappy days. So I think they're waiting for that consistent weather to make sure that he's pitching in good weather.
I saw them in regards to the weather this early in the season. It winds up being a factor some years more than others. But in regards to minor league development, they were talking about how Norrie actually has an advantage there because he's from Michigan or something. And so, like, he's able to, he's born in Canada. That's right. So he's got some cold weather experience that they're like, yeah, he can play in the spring. He's from Canada.
Absolutely. I mean, like, that has to matter a little bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how much, but I think it matters a little bit.
If you're going to go, if the end goal is for you to play for a team in the Northeast. Yeah, man, we don't have toasty springs or same with fall up here. You know, you get the summer and that's hitting season.
There's a difference between getting sawed off at 45 degrees versus getting sawed off at 78 degrees And that difference is the difference between AAA and the big leagues right now. Like, it is different.
So Mitch, what's your shorthand here? We're not quite at the beginning of the season anymore. We're about 6 weeks into the Major League Baseball season, and the minor league seasons are all underway, as we've been saying. So just to gauge your where you're at here, what's your shorthand for the Phillies farm system in total as the 2026 season gets underway here? Like, are we looking stronger, holding even? Have the promotions of Crawford and Painter kind of weakened things or made room for other guys? Like, what's the general state of things in summation for the Phillies farm system in 2026?
The word I love to use is interesting.
Oh, no.
Interesting farm system. Here's why. Like, people, I get DMs all the time, people asking, is this guy for real? Or is this just a couple starts? And I'm like, he's good enough to be interesting right now. Like, you should be paying attention to Ramon Marquez down in Clearwater, to Luke Gabrish in Jersey Shore, to obviously Illyrio Farabus in Clearwater, Wen Wei Pan, who's now in Jersey Shore. Guys that you should be paying attention to, that maybe aren't necessarily top 100 type prospects, but have skill sets that can help out a big league club. And now you get to watch them develop from the lowest levels of the minor leagues and see where they are in a little while. I mean, I know we're all waiting for Francisco Renteria, who was the big signing in January, to get stateside. He's 17 years old and none of us have seen him play yet. He's the guy we're all waiting for next, but there are a lot of interesting players that are worth keeping an eye on the minor leagues. It's not a good system by where these people are right now. Now that Justin Crawford and Andrew Painter have graduated, Aiden Miller has a back that isn't allowing him to play. Like, there's not a lot of top end talent, and the depth is very unproven depth within the system right now, but it's interesting. I can go down through the system and find a guy down in the 20s that are very interesting, worth watching.
You mentioned seeing something from Renteria. I'd settle for Aiden Miller picking up a bat.
I'd love to see that. Yeah. Just be in the dugout, man. Be at a game.
Remind people what that face looks like. Come on now. We've been talking to Mitch Rupert, contributor to PhilliesMinorThoughts.com. Follow him on Blue Sky at Mitch_Rupert. Mitch, thanks for joining us on Hitting Season.
Hey, thanks for having me, Justin.
That'll do it for this episode of Hitting Season. My thanks to my co-host Liz Rocher and our guest Mitch Rupert. You can get new episodes of Hitting Season 3 times a week at BillyPenn.com/HittingSeason, as well as anywhere you get your podcasts. You can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hitting Season Patreon at Patreon.com/HittingSeason. We have a new episode of The Dirty Inning up there on the 1999 11-game losing streak that the 2026 Phillies just about matched a couple of weeks ago. So that was a lot of fun. I'm Justin Clue, and from WHYY, that's the ballgame. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.